This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, April 4th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll examine what happens to the brain and to the family when a relative is diagnosed with Alzheimer's. The United Nations has voted to send climate change issues to the World Court. That story and more on This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth? Today, the Science Show team talks with experts about dangers to the Tibetan roof of the world, nuclear weapons plants, and risky additives in Easter candy. Then we join naturalist Steve Jones and Ruth Carroll Cushman looking for Boulder's own native Easter daisies. At 9 a.m., tune in for another archival recording of British philosopher Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for headlines with KGNU's John Callan.
Today is Election Day in Denver as voters head to the polls to choose a new mayor and decide who will fill seats on the city council. If none of the 16 mayoral candidates gets at least half of the vote, there will be a runoff between the top two vote-getters on June 6th. Current Mayor Michael Hancock is term-limited. He's been in office since 2011. In the city council race, 8 seats will be decided, including 2 at-large seats. Voters will also choose Denver's next auditor. Early ballots went out last month, but as of April 2nd, only about 15% had been turned in, according to Colorado Politics. They say most of the submitted ballots are from voters 65 and older. 2 gun safety measures have received final approval from state lawmakers and are headed to Governor Jared Polis for his signature. Senate Bill 170 is the so-called red flag expansion law that would widen the list of those who can ask for orders to keep firearms away from people who might pose a risk to themselves or others. The new law would include district attorneys, college faculty, K-12 teachers and counselors, and medical personnel. In his 2023 State of the State address, Governor Polis said he supported expanding the red flag law, and he is expected to sign it. Senate Bill 169 would raise the minimum age for buying a firearm from 18 to 21. The governor has not said whether he supports that one. A third gun safety bill is on its way to a conference committee. Senate Bill 168 would allow the victims of gun violence to sue gun manufacturers in certain circumstances. 2 other gun safety measures are on the horizon. House Bill 1230 is an assault weapons ban, and a bill that would outlaw so-called ghost guns is expected in the current legislative session. Commuters who ride the Regional Transit District's light rail system in Denver are looking at service disruptions over the next 6 months. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo has the story.
Maintenance work that began yesterday is expected to disrupt service in the RTD's light rail systems, E, H, and R lines. The Denver Post says RTD will repair the caps on retaining walls and that service disruptions are expected through October. The work started at the Lincoln Station and will continue north, running along I-25 and Broadway. 9 R-Line stations are out of service between the Lincoln and Florida stations near Lone Tree. Sections of the E-Line are continuing service as scheduled, but lines between Southmore and Ridgegate Parkway are running every 30 minutes instead of 15 as usual. The H-Line will experience disruptions starting later this spring. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
First Lady Dr. Jill Biden spent a little more time in Colorado than originally planned. She arrived here on Sunday, the first stop on a tour highlighting federal laws backed by President Joe Biden. Her Monday afternoon flight from Colorado to Michigan was forced to return to Denver due to an unspecified aircraft issue. The plane landed safely without any problem, and Dr. Biden's press secretary said everyone on board was safe. The trip to Michigan will be rescheduled. While she was in Colorado, the First Lady heard from local lawmakers, from students who've used state job training programs, and also how federal legislation has benefited the state. 2 programs to help homeowners and small businesses affected by the Marshall Fire and Wind event are underway. KGNU's Steve Miller has the details.
The homeowners who are rebuilding on the property where they lost their homes due to the Marshall or Calwood fires qualify for Boulder County's use tax rebate. The Daily Camera reports that the maximum rebate for those rebuilding who submitted in 2022 is $3,500, and the maximum for those who submit in 2023-2024 is $4,200. The deadline to apply for the Marshall Fire Affected Properties Rebate is December 1, 2024. Kelwood Fire Affected Properties have until October 31, 2023 to apply. The rebate program is not available for purchasers of lots affected by the fires. Small businesses that were affected by the Marshall Fire and wind event can apply for a grant. Boulder County and the state of Colorado are working with the Colorado Enterprise Fund to provide grants through a one-time competitive program. The maximum grant amount for a single business is $20,000. Small businesses must apply by 5 p.m. April 28th on the Colorado Enterprise Fund website. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
The city of Boulder is inviting residents to fill out one of three questionnaires on the topic of gas-powered landscaping equipment. Each questionnaire targets a specific group: people who live and work in Boulder, people who own Boulder rental property, and the owners and employees of Boulder landscaping businesses. The city is looking for feedback on the impact of gas-powered equipment like lawnmowers and leaf blowers, which can pose health and environmental issues. Each questionnaire is open till April 17th, and a link to them can be found at the BeHeardBoulder.org website. Today's weather forecast: a return to wintry weather along the Front Range. Light snow is possible through the day, but with little to no accumulation. In Boulder, look for a high temperature of 38 degrees, a high of 34 in Fort Collins, 40 degrees in Denver. Colder up in Nederland with a high of 29 degrees. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Dementia is a neurological condition that disproportionately affects older patients. And as baby boomers age, a greater portion of the U.S. population is at risk than in past generations. But the subject is often taboo, leaving families isolated as the mental capacities of loved ones slip away. The Boulder Bookstore is hosting an event this evening called Alzheimer's Adventure and Brain Health. Among the speakers will be Cindy Weinstein, author of the book Finding the Right Words, a story of literature, grief, and the brain. And she joins me in the studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Shannon. Nice to be here.
Well, thanks for braving the snow. Your book is a memoir about your late father's struggle with early onset Alzheimer's disease and how it impacted your family. But it was co-written with a neurologist, Dr. Bruce Miller. What do you want readers to take away from your book?
I want readers to take away a couple of things. One is about grief, and however you grieve is fine. We have a tendency to want to rush through grief, and I think that that is not necessarily a healthy approach to the loss of a loved one. And the other thing I want readers to take away is, and this is Bruce's, Dr. Miller's contribution to the book, is information about brain health. Bruce is an expert in dementia, specifically frontotemporal dementia, although he can speak to all dementias. And it was really important to write a memoir that combined my own experience of grief with Bruce's expertise in neurology.
And at the event that you'll be speaking at tonight at the Boulder Bookstore, there will also be two other authors with exactly that preventative lens of brain health. One will look at physical activity and the other diets that keep the brain healthy. What can you tell me about what you know of their presentations as well?
Sure thing. Travis has written a magnificent book.
Travis who?
Travis Macy.
Okay.
Has written a magnificent book along with Patrick Regan. And Travis's father, Mark Mace Macy, has been diagnosed with early onset. And his voice comes through in the book quite beautifully in journal entries that begin each chapter. And theirs is a really amazing story about the body and the importance of taking care of the body, the mind-body connection. And that's also what Dr. Annie Fenn is interested in exploring in her gorgeous cookbook, the ways that the Mediterranean diet in particular is very good for the brain. And what's good for the brain is good for the body and vice versa.
Now, you come to us from California, but you'll be speaking tonight in Boulder, and you'll see that it is a city with a large population over the age of 65, which is precisely the highest risk demographic for degenerative neurological conditions. What advice would you give to people who may have spouses or siblings or peers who may be facing a diagnosis similar to that of your father's?
The caregiver position is extraordinarily important. And one thing I would say to people who are caring for a loved one with dementia is take care of yourself. Make sure that as careful as you are to ensure that your loved one with dementia goes to their doctor appointments, that you go to yours too. Because there's data to show that caregivers often die before the person with dementia dies. And so I always, whenever I have the opportunity, the other thing I would suggest is try not to be in denial. It's very attractive to be in denial because what you're experiencing is extraordinarily painful. And caregivers can go to therapy sessions, support groups. I attended a support group years after my father died and found it extremely beneficial. For caregivers who like to write, I think journaling can be very helpful and also assist with not being in denial, because if you write something on the page, it's there, it exists, and you're forced to confront it. And as difficult as it is to confront what's happening in the moment, I can speak from experience and say it's better to do that than to wait until it's too late and have to grieve after.
I think many of us are just getting to the point in society where we can look pragmatically at death, which is something that's going to affect all of us. You know, right. It's the same thing of, you know, don't go into denial mode, go into what, how are we going to deal with this mode? Right. And while some people are, you know, overcoming their hurdles of being able to plan for their own deaths and all of the logistics that entails, it's not so much when you're dealing with a chronic degenerative illness. What are some of the grief mechanisms that you talked about, or the coping mechanisms, just ways to confront it and stay healthy while you are dealing with something that is extremely painful, that is long lasting,
right?
And that is, you're really in for the long haul with it,
right? I think it's important to go into this and not have an expectation that you're going to get an A or an A plus every time. And that can be very hard for some people. And you, I think it's good to get to a place where you're able to say to yourself, I'm doing the best I can. And whatever that looks like, you should feel confident that you're trying your best. And sometimes it can be so frustrating that you may lose your patience. But like, you're a human being. And I think being able to forgive yourself for the moments where you're not necessarily living up to what your own expectations as a caregiver might be, but that's okay. That's okay. You'll have plenty of other opportunities to hit it out of the park, as it were. I can't stand sports analogies, and I just used one, but I think it's right.
You were also at the Anschutz Medical Center yesterday to meet with a doctor who specializes in narrative medicine. What is that?
Narrative medicine is a very interdisciplinary field of inquiry that was developed by Dr. Rita Sharon at Columbia University. She got a PhD in English and then got an MD and realized that the tools of being a literary critic could translate into the clinical situation. And by that, I mean listening, interpreting, being a close reader of a patient's story. So the importance of storytelling for doctors is a key aspect of narrative medicine. Empathy is a key aspect of narrative medicine. And basically empowering the family, or in this case, maybe the person with dementia, empowering them to be able to explain to the doctor their experience. And the importance of narrative medicine, I think, is attempting to kind of shift the power dynamic slightly and giving the family an opportunity to tell their story, and the importance of doing that, and the importance of having the doctor hear that story.
I've been speaking with Cindy Weinstein, author of Finding the Right Words, A Story of Literature, Grief, and the Brain. She'll be speaking this evening at 6:30 p.m. at the Boulder Bookstore. Thank you for coming into the studio this morning.
Thank you very much, Shannon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Up next is This Week in Water.
A grueling sporting event is doing science. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
People have tried before and failed, which makes the recent effort by a group of students all the more remarkable.
About 4 years ago, law students from 8 Pacific islands, all threatened by climate change, urged nations including Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji to go to the World Court with their complaint that countries weren't doing enough to fight global warming.
Last week, the United Nations General Assembly agreed and passed a resolution to define the obligations of countries to address climate change, a move that could clarify international law. It was adopted with more than 130 nations co-sponsoring and without any votes opposed.
One expert said a decision by the World Court could strongly influence other courts around the world, which are hearing a growing number of climate change cases.
While the U.S. and China did not vote against the resolution, neither of the two largest greenhouse gas-emitting nations supported it. The World Court could issue an opinion in 18 months.
It was just weeks ago that the United Nations member states agreed upon an international treaty that will, when ratified, protect the biodiversity of the high seas. But the world's oceans are still not safe.
It was learned last week that the UN's International Seabed Authority will soon begin accepting applications to mine the ocean floor, which is opposed by many for its potential harm to marine environments.
In the deep ocean, there are potato-sized nodules that contain cobalt, zinc, and other minerals that are used in batteries. They're abundant in the North Pacific between Hawaii and Mexico.
And while the UN Seabed Authority was meeting last week, an updated report was released stating there's no proven technique to harvest the nodules that avoids the loss of biodiversity, and they say the harm could be irreversible.
Even if companies apply to mine the ocean starting this July, whether they'll be granted a permit is uncertain because the UN authority has yet to approve any rules around the controversial practice.
If the oceans had lungs, this would be one of them. So said Matthew England at the University of Sydney, Australia, about the cold, oxygen-rich waters near Antarctica that drive how currents move around the planet.
For thousands of years, cold water off Antarctica sinks toward the seabed, and in a process known as the overturning circulation, lifts nutrient and oxygen-rich seawater from the ocean floor and sends it toward the surface around the globe to support marine life.
But he says that lung function could soon collapse, threatening ocean health for centuries to come.
In a new study, England and his team say global warming is melting Antarctic ice and causing fresh water to flow into the ocean that's less salty and less dense and therefore doesn't sink. That's all that's needed, they say, to slow the entire conveyor belt of ocean circulation, leaving nutrients stuck on the seafloor and unable to support ecosystems.
The researchers calculated that if global
an overturning slowdown would also reduce the ocean's ability to take up carbon dioxide, That would leave more greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, causing more warming and then melting sea ice in a dangerous feedback loop. And finally, the ocean race is described as the longest and perhaps most dangerous sporting event in the world. It's a marathon where sailors compete for months and travel 32,000 nautical miles around the globe in some of the planet's toughest waters, including the Southern Ocean that encircles Antarctica.
Because the Southern Ocean is vast and remote, it's been difficult for scientists to study. But it's also crucial because much of what happens in the Southern Sea affects global climate.
Luckily, four teams are in that region now, sailing the third leg of the race from Cape Town, South Africa toward Brazil. And as they navigate to avoid icebergs and brace against gale force winds, they'll be doing vital science.
Some boats will take water samples to measure carbon dioxide to provide insights about climate change, and also measure trace elements like zinc, iron, and manganese, which are vital for plankton, the base of the ocean food chain.
Other boats will collect samples to test for microplastics, and the entire fleet will measure air temperature, wind speed, and barometric pressure to improve weather forecasts and predict extreme events.
Each team will drop buoys to collect data on sea surface temperatures as the planet warms, and while the buoys drift, they will transmit information about currents to understand where the heat is moving.
All the data will be sent in real time to several partner science organizations, which will then share their findings with governments to urge them to take action on climate and plastic pollution.
The race will finish in June, but the race to save our oceans is on now, and is, the organizers say, a contest we definitely have to win.
That's it for this week in water. Support comes from WaterDM, an engineering consulting firm focused on demand-side management of water resources. Learn more at waterdm.com.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Hi, I'm listener member. I am listening to Hemispheres right now, and certain assertions are being made about the war in Ukraine. I really would like it if there was a chance to call up and ask questions, to ask for clarification with some of the assertions being made. Particularly, this discussion concerns the war in Ukraine and how Russia is a victim of Western aggression, which, you know, maybe it is, except who's being the aggressor? I just wish I could clarify some things, and please open things up to public comment and public questioning. That would be very, very helpful in these troubled times. Thank you so much.
Hi, I just listened to an interview with High Plains Environmental Group Thursday morning, March 29th, and the claim was made. It was a good interview overall, but claim was made that you need herbicides to control Canada thistle. I have a farm. I once had 3 acres of thistle on the farm. It's grass, it was grassland, pasture land, which I didn't need herbicides. I reseeded the 3 acres with appropriate grasses, which are adapted to the area. And I did irrigate it, but over a period of 5 years, after mowing, being the only application of a human nature, it reverted to grassland. And I didn't use any herbicides at all since I have an organic farm.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. that's it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to John Kellen, Steve Miller, Alyssa Palazzo, Jamie Sudler, Franny Halperin, and in-studio guest Cindy Weinstein for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's all ahead after these headlines from the BBC.